And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, he returns, Dan Lombardo, President and Chief Executive Officer, along with Alexis Deegan. She is Vice President of Development and Communications for Volunteers of America, Delaware Valley. I want to say it's been about 9 or 10 months since we talked to you, Dan.
That's right.
We were still, at that moment, COVID was the number one topic of conversations because we were just coming through the other end at that time, and we talked a lot about how the mission and the need has grown over the last couple of years. But before we get into those kind of details, would you give us that overview of who are the Volunteers of America?
Well, the Volunteers of America is an organization that was founded in 1896 by two Christian reformers who had a philosophical disagreement with their father of how to minister to the colonies, if you will. The founders of Volunteers of America is Ballington and Maud Booth. The founder of the Salvation Army, William Booth, was Ballington's father, and how they wanted to minister to the colonies was the big differential between fathers and sons. Dad wanted him to preach the word, and he said, you can't preach the word to people who are hungry, have no place to stay. You have to meet their physical needs before you can meet their spiritual needs. And that's been the essence of the organization for the last 127 years.
When you use the colonies, we keep forgetting that both organizations had their roots in London, dealing with
exactly.
The poor.
Exactly.
And isn't it a terrible thing that the same situations, the same issues are still with us today? And you minister to and help people at some of their worst times in their life. Maybe they are chronically homeless. Maybe they have mental health issues. They can be hungry, homeless, you name it. And they are going to receive services from you. And they're going to receive them in a large area. What's your footprint? Who do you serve?
Our geographical footprint is the entire state of Pennsylvania, the 11 southern counties of New Jersey, and the state of Delaware. Where most of our services and programs are in Pennsylvania and in southern New Jersey. We have partnerships with our colleague agency out of Greater New York City, who has the northern 10 counties of New Jersey. And so we work with them up there also for various different programs and services. What we do here in the Delaware Valley is the primary populations that we serve are people who are homeless, folks coming from the prison system back to society. We also work with parole boards and probation and organizations like that. But we also do affordable housing. We also provide mental health services. We provide addiction services. So it's an organization that addresses individual needs on an individual basis. So what it does is whatever your presenting issues or problem are, regardless, we will take whatever we can and do whatever we can to help you get over the hurdles that you have so you can become a functioning member of society.
You're in 46 states. This is a far-reaching service organization. And I mentioned earlier that the last time we spoke, we were coming out of COVID. And has the situation changed much over the last couple of years, or what's been the fallout? And I'm going to guess that this is something that's national, that what's happening here is happening across the country. But what's the state right now of families here?
It's a very interesting change. The world was changed with COVID. As a result, there were a lot more resources that were made available because folks were really forced to stay at home. Lots of folks were being hospitalized. And then after they were being hospitalized, they had no place to go, especially those that were homeless. So, for example, during COVID, we ran a COVID hotel for about 4.5 months in order to make sure that we could make sure that folks transitioned back from the hospital back to an environment that's safe where they could be provided support. And then what we would do is then we would work to get them into housing of their own. So what has changed is the pandemic seems to have faded, or it's still with us. It will be us forever. But what we're doing now is that has created a system of services in which we want to make sure that once we have a contact with someone, that we will follow that someone all the way over to to independence as much as possible, whether they be veterans, whether they be folks that are coming out of the criminal justice system, whether they be homeless families, or individuals that are homeless. Those with unique and special needs, we also provide services to folks with intellectual disabilities, as well as chronic mental illness. We have a program for folks in Philadelphia, who, for example, who have traumatic brain injury. So we can design programs to meet unique and special needs.
I think that's one of the most interesting things that I've learned about Volunteers of America, the national organization and the local affiliate. I've known about the organization for 20, 30 years, but it wasn't until I started working for them that I truly understood the adaptability of the organization. So a Volunteers of America Delaware Valley might look different than a Volunteers of America Chesapeake because the needs of the community are different. And I just see across this organization a constant ear to the ground of what is going on in people's lives, what are the needs our clients are seeing that are not being served by us or the community at large, and how can we fill in those gaps, and what programs can we develop to fill in those gaps. And I mean, I'm a little bit of a fangirl, but like, it has been amazing to watch over the last 3 years that I've been working here, just the constant attention to what's going on in the community and how can we adapt to better serve folks. So when Dan mentioned affordable housing, for example, we have 6 affordable housing complexes. We have one that's coming up that will be, you know, focused on having units set aside for individuals who have a criminal justice background, because, you know, the housing crisis is what it is. And it's, you know, housing stock is, it's so hard to find an apartment. And then when you add a criminal record into that, it's even harder. So I've watched them go, okay, we'll just build it, which is just, we'll just build it should be our mission, like our submission. So
it's an awful thing to say, but serving people in need is a big business. And I know that you're a relatively huge organization, because when someone comes through your doors, you might think that you're dealing with an immediate issue of they don't have permanent housing. And then you discover that maybe they have children with special needs, or there is an issue with addiction or some other problem. It snowballs, and then you find yourself, and it's a holistic approach, because you can't just put somebody down and give them a key. You have to make them stable enough to stay in that keyed home.
That's you're right. And how we put it together is our funding is basically a patchwork quilt of resources. We get federal money, we get state money. We have our donors, who are the basic pulse beat of the organization, who underwrite the costs of services that are not reimbursed by government, that will deal with folks who are ineligible for any services or programs from government. That donors allow us to make sure that those needs of those individuals are met. So it's as why I say it's this unique webbing and partnership with the community that makes it work. If it wasn't for the community and their support for us, then we wouldn't have places to put people. We wouldn't have programs to offer people. And that's the thing that's been the magic of the organization.
Ooh, you just said the partnership word. And it does take a village to find these people and get them into that web that you're talking about. And I know you work with hospitals, with social service organizations, with civic groups, and law enforcement as well.
Law enforcement and us have a very unique partnership. We are now partnering with 27 law enforcement entities within Southern New Jersey alone. And what that allows us to do is two things. We work in hand in hand with law enforcement as they deal with the law enforcement issue. When that issue is over, they now transfer that individual to us to meet the social services need. There's usually a cause for every issue that they're dealing with. The interesting thing for us is we now have staff embedded in so many police departments, so that after the law enforcement issue has been handled by a local officer, then what they'll do is they'll dispatch our staff, who will go and then deal with the family, the individual, or whatever it might be, whether they're being in a holding cell or whether they're being still at home. We're there to support them. This partnership has been, I think, one of the most unique areas of growth and development for us, primarily because the original crisis managers in our community have been law enforcement. It's what they do with the people that has always been the mystery. So we have, for example, when they find somebody at 2 o'clock in the morning that's homeless, where do they take them? Well, we have a separate shelter that's set up solely for law enforcement. So 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, they need to take someone there. We got it staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we can start planning to deal with the issues that person's presenting the day that they get with us.
This is an open-ended question, but how long do people stay with Volunteers of America? Is there a handoff time, or do you stay with the family indefinitely?
We do all of the above.
If you really I knew that was going to come.
That's the best way to describe it. If you take a look at the average length of stay, let's take a look at it that way, okay? When you're providing services to single adult men that are homeless in our shelters and in our single adult shelters, the average length of stay for them is 63 days. From there, we transfer them to what we call something called master leasing. We have the ability of leasing apartments that they don't have the ability. No landlord would rent apartments to them. They don't have a credit history. The utilities won't turn their utilities on. So what we'll do is we'll rent the apartment. Then we'll put them up and we'll provide them support services while they're in that apartment to help clean up whatever their bad history is and whatever their credit history is, so that at some point in time, that apartment will be able to be given to them and we can go on to the next person. That may take 7 months. It may take 2.5 years. It's hard to say. Programs have to be designed to meet individual need. There is no magic bullet. There are no quick fixes. Each person has unique aspects to their life that have created some of these issues. And sometimes they're buried very deeply that you have to do a lot of work extensively with them. Otherwise, sometimes you get very lucky where a quick fix and a little buffing and polishing and they're on their way, you know?
And this can mean everything from treatment and addiction counseling to, reunification with family, job placements.
Yes, ma'am. One of the things that happens when you're discharged from prison, you're basically told, go out and sin no more, okay? Well, you're discharged with $30 or $40 and a bus ticket. The community that you're coming back to not only has completely changed since you've been away, but you don't even know if your family, if they haven't kept up with you, even want to see you again. So this is why we run the halfway house program. We allow folks to come back to the community, and then we try to see if there's an available relationship with their family, and then we'll make them part of the treatment team. As we help and work folks trying to get from one place to another, we can get them employed. We'll make sure that they understand that there are some rules and regulations that they have to follow. If not, they're returned to custody. So it's a real clean and simple kind of program. And we encourage their family to participate because their family can be their anchor, or if they're not that anchor because of issues that they have, then it's time for them to be a little bit more independent of that family. Let's see if we can support them as they go that way.
You know, there's a different kind of prison, and that is mental health issues. And restoring someone back to a typical life is another one of the areas that you work on. And I'm so impressed by that. That's one of the reasons why I keep bringing it up. But you have housing to help transition back for them as well. And on the other, you also have intellectual disability services and for people with traumatic brain injuries.
Yes, we have all of those kinds of programs. For example, the programs that we spend the most time and energy on are folks who have issues with co-occurring disorders. They're mentally ill and have substance abuse history. Okay, you don't know what created which. It's not important which created which, but let's see what we can do in prioritizing to address their own individual need. Let's work on the addiction, and while we're working on the addiction, let's also see if we can get some mental health services provided, because we have, you know, case management professionals, we have psychiatric support that's available to us. So those kinds of, you know, partnerships that we have in the community make us sort of like taking the different individuals of the village and then providing them the individual services that they need so they can come back and function in the village. And so that's the whole idea of making sure that the programs are cyclical. Now, since there are no magic bullets or quick fixes, there are some people who we have been providing support and services to for very, very long periods of time, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. because they always need that sort of umbilical cord to us, just so they can manage crisis better, or so they can feel a little bit more relaxed in the environment that they're in, so that they know how to deal with whatever their symptomatology might be. So those kinds of things are also available to us. The biggest issue that we have with that is no one funds follow-up and aftercare. They really don't. But because of the folks that are our donors and who support us, that's another use of those resources that are given to us to make sure that we can extend care to folks who are independent until they're completely independent.
Hey, if you're just joining us today, we are talking to Dan Lombardo, President and Chief Executive Officer for Volunteers of America Delaware Valley, and Alexis Deegan. She is Vice President of Development and Communications. If you'd like to learn more about Volunteers of America and our Delaware Valley organization, go to voadv.org. That's voadv.org for Volunteers of America Delaware Valley. I was talking to Major Tim Sheehan of the Delaware Salvation Army the other week, and he told me that need and requests were up 65%. And I'm talking about emergency help, where someone is at this moment in trouble. And is this something that you are seeing as well? And I might be wrong on that number.
It's been escalating. It has been escalating over the last 2 years. 65% for us is a little low. We think it's a little higher than that. The kinds of services that we're seeing are, you know, following the economics of our society and culture. As rent has gone up, more and more folks have become homeless. As the economy sort of is trying to figure out what it's going to do, a lot of folks have lost their jobs, and trying to keep folks into housing in trying to keep them stable during that period of time while they look for either employment or housing, it has always been the challenge for us. So for us, there's always more demand than there is supply. And if there's anything that we could do, if we were the king or queen, king and queen of the forest, the kind of thing that we would recommend is there need to be more of a commitment of governmental resources to underwrite the cost of housing, because that's, to us, the biggest crisis now since COVID.
And so how do we get involved? What can a person, a business, maybe another service organization, what can we do to, one, support your efforts and to help our communities?
This is my area. So throughout the year, we are always accepting physical donations. And I love to promote how much we need underwear, and it drives everyone crazy. But truly, new underwear is something that every single one of our clients needs at any given time. And I'm always like, give us underwear. So throughout the year, we accept physical donations at our donation center that supports all of our programming. We also, you know, have an online giving. You can always, you know, check out on our website where you can give us some of that money that helps support the things that government doesn't fund. And we have throughout the year different giving programs specific to needs. We just wrapped up our Operation Backpack, which supports not only our programs, but this year we supported about 20 area programs as well, children in need of backpacks. And on top of that, that's fully separate from our Safe Return Navigator and Impact program that did 8,000 backpacks at 30 different sites throughout South Jersey in one day.
It was with our law enforcement partners.
We had law enforcement in stuffing the backpacks, and then we had them out giving out the backpacks. It was truly, truly spectacular. And then this time of year, it's my baby, adopt a family, where we support anywhere from 800 to 1,000 families in the community. And again, this is individuals, children in our programs, or the children of adults in our programs, but also folks in the community. And this year is the first year we've expanded to many of our law enforcement partners. So we have folks who are signing up in the Paulsboro PD, at the Pine Hill PD, you know, and then throughout South Jersey and Philadelphia. Yes, we have at least 20 programs in Philadelphia that are giving us families in need. And I mean, it truly is spectacular to see the generosity of our community when it comes to adopt a family.
And I'll do a commercial for you. Because of the support of Beasley Group,
yes.
We have a radiothon that's like no other in the Delaware Valley. It is absolutely terrific. The outpouring of support that we get as a result of that, because of Beasley's support of what we're doing, means the world to us.
Yeah. It has been truly spectacular to watch.
And it's wonderful to see the end results. But if someone is unfamiliar with Adoptive Family, because I know we're right in the throes of that, you opened the doors early this year to start that campaign. Kristen Herman of our Beasley station, Ben FM, was telling me that that you're already collecting. Is this a monetary or an item driven campaign?
It is both, because one of the things that I'm, you know, that we talk to folks about is this is a massive organization and it takes money to run. You know, some folks are, you know, more interested in giving things. And so what happens is we enroll the family. The family gives us wish lists. It's three wishes and as many needs. And one of the things that, you know, I always have to, you know, sit down with my staff at the beginning to talk about, you know, It's a difficult time because we're looking at deep, deep need. You'll see need for clothing, need for bedding, need for food. So those profiles, every wish list is loaded up onto a site called Roonga, where you can look at the profiles and choose a family that speaks to you. And then you can go shopping for that family as well. So, you know, we have families who are single parents. We have families who are non-parental guardians, so grandparents or aunts and uncles raising kids. We have a lot of families who have special needs. We partner with a couple of different programs that, you know, that help kids with special needs. So they're in there too. And truly, so you can either give us cash monies, which we love. Businesses can sponsor. And, you know, and that always helps as well. Because also at the end of the program that, you know, when I say, so it runs until, officially it runs until December 14th. That's our official close date. But it really runs up until really Christmas, but December 22nd, because in that week, we assess any families that either haven't been adopted or whose adopters have, for whatever reason, maybe they lost their job unexpectedly, or they had a different economic strain that they didn't count on, had to drop their families. We then spend that week shopping shelves of individuals who have sent us items off of our Amazon wish list or who have done general drives. We partner with the Apartment Association of New Jersey. They have boxes in their lobbies. Other organizations do toy drives. And then we take what we have and shop the shelves to fulfill those wishes and then buy anything that we have to. And that, again, is where those monetary donations are really key.
You just said Amazon.
I did. You know, one of the things when COVID happened, everyone had strain of resources and it might be difficult for someone to adopt a full family. And we recognized that. So we took some of those, you know, universal items that are needed, Legos and educational toys for kids, books, clothing, bedding, and put them on our Amazon wish list. So an individual can decide that they're going to bend a bag and, Lego set, and they will have helped a child. They don't have to, you know, commit to the whole family, which can be, you know, an economic strain. They can just be part of the solution.
That is amazing. And if I am a family in need, I know that you are, some centers are still accepting names, but the list is already grown. Is it past last year at this time?
It is past the pace of last year. I keep records from like how many families we have signed up from one year to the next. And we have hit the number of families that we had signed up in October of last year. And, you know, one of the things that is telling about that is that our department, Development and Communications, used to sign up 300 families. And we've been pushing our allotment of families into those programs that serve the community directly. So this year we only signed up 100 families. So that 300 families used to be baked in. And then, you know, on top of that, the other programs. But at this moment, we already have more than that because the need is great. And so we do whatever we can to expand our ability to take in more families.
And the families are all vetted and to document the need. So that the donors can feel very comfortable that they are giving to someone who deserves it. And the other thing is that because of the generosity that we get during the radiothon and things like that, we then have a supplemental reserve of cash for those that fall through the cracks, where, you know, they couldn't be adopted, or maybe the family was too large, or there are lots of different unique circumstances like that. And so what we can do is we can go right in behind them to make sure that they have Christmas too.
Well, we are sitting down to record this towards the end of October. And so that is very disconcerting to hear that the numbers are already at the end of October from last year. And so if I'm hearing this, I go to your website.
Yep, voadv.org. This time of year, the Adoptive Family link is right there on the homepage. But if you want to /adoptive family, so voadv.org/adoptive family. And that's where you see the process. You have the links to donate. You have the link to our Amazon website, the link to find a family on our Roomba site. And it's very, you know, Cassidy, who is our creative services specialist, did a really great job of giving a, you know, step-by-step guide, make it super easy. And always, you know, you can reach out to us if you have questions too.
And last year we did over 1,000 families, and we think we're going to beat that one this year.
Yeah.
Oh dear. And if I'm hearing this, I am an organization, maybe I am a church group, a neighborhood organization, and I want to get involved supporting you in other fashions. Do you look for volunteers? Do you look for collection sites? What do you look for from the community throughout the year?
Well, so you've heard the vast programming that we have. So that, you know, is vast and diverse on the other side too. We do volunteers throughout the year. We've had a lot of groups from different local organizations, local companies come in and either stuff backpacks with us for Operation Backpack, or, you know, shop our shelves during Adopt a Family. They go into our shelters. They work with our senior housing. There's a whole bingo, you know, situation going on in our, you know, our affordable housing complexes. You know, we have companies do drives like for hygiene kits, or it is Socktober as we're recording this. So we have a couple of schools that are doing Socktoberfest drives. Honestly, it's a blessing and a curse in that our need is vast because our clientele is vast. So if there is something that you're interested in putting together a drive for, we can accept it because we will have someone who needs it. And, you know, and if we don't, for whatever reason, we do also have other local communities serving clients like ours who could come in and get clothing or anything we have an abundance of. So truly any group or organization that wants to get involved, or individual, they can do that by going to our website too, or giving us a call. It's really, really, really easy to help out. We try to make it as, you know, as accessible to folks as possible.
I hate to say it, but we are out of time, and we're going to start with you, Alexis. Parting words.
I just thank you guys so much for, you know, taking the time to give us this air and talk to folks we might not otherwise reach. Thank you.
And now it's your turn.
You have given us again a very, very exciting morning. So thank you for allowing us to share what we love to do, especially with a network who has been very, very supportive of us. We really do appreciate the partnership more than you know. Thank you.
And of course, you're always open to more partnerships so others can jump on the bandwagon. And you play nice with others. That's the great thing. With other community organizations and groups and neighborhoods. And so best of luck on this season. Thanks. And in the year coming, we will, of course, talk to you again soon. I know we always do. So here's where I say thank you. Dan Lombardo, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Alexis Deegan, Vice President of Development and Communications for Volunteers of America, Delaware Valley. You find them at VOADV for Volunteers of America, Delaware Valley. I love easy. VOADV.org. You'll learn more there and how to find out about all of their programming, whatever your circumstance may be, giving, receiving, or wanting more information. And again, you're all over the place with chapters across the country. That is voa.org. And for us, voadv.org. Thank you both for being on today.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.